I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, we have a special guest. Every guest of ours is very special. We have Kyle France, who is a quickly ascending up the architecture ranks. Kyle is very busy. He's got a ton of projects, which we talk about a good handful of them. He worked for Tom Doak and Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw. He's a great guy, great architect, and his restoration is on display this week with the U.S. Women's Open. Should be a highly entertaining watch this weekend. I would recommend tuning in. Pine Needles is a really neat Donald Ross course that everybody can play. It's part of the Pine Needles Mid Pines and now Southern Pines Resort there. Kyle has restored each of those golf courses. So he's got extensive Donald Ross experience. He was also part of Bill and Ben's crew that restored Pinehurst number 2. So thank you to Kyle for coming on and fitting us into a very busy week where he's on site. And I hope you guys enjoy this. Hey, what's it been like being a, you know, up and coming architect? You've had this boom of projects. Obviously, you know, there's work going on everywhere. What's been the hardest thing about getting really busy?
The fact that we are busy, a lot to do, a lot to think about. You know, being a golf course designer is, it's kind of a shell game, you know, where you're trying to make sure all your work is as good as it can possibly be in the field while working on getting ready for the next project, the specifications, the budgets, just the preparing of everything, permits, everything. And then getting out there and get after all these new jobs in like the hottest market since when I first entered the industry. So it's a heavy shell game, you know, and everybody knows, Andy, that of all the architects, I'm like the least social media conscious, just like the classic artist nose to the grindstone. So I actually hired somebody to help us from around the resort here at Pine Needles this week for that in the future. Because at the end of the day, sooner or later, you got to do at least a little bit of marketing. So it's been a busy, busy stretch, but all for good reasons. We have such a great run of projects coming up between, you know, heck, just what we got going on here this week with Pine Needles and the Women's Open. You know, Sam, our young intern at Shaper, was out there in the field until dark 30 last night, getting everything ready. And we got Lookout Mountain coming down the pike next week. Cabot Citrus Farms after that. Wampanoag up north, great old Ross course that Brad Klein and Michael Fay, I think they started the Donald Ross Society at. And some cool stuff we've been having going on lately between Charlotte Country Club and
Southern Pines.
Eastward Ho Club. Southern Pines opening back up. Yeah, you know,
you're,
I mean,
busy, it's been, man.
It's been a blast. Some stuff up in the Northeast in the Green Mountains, Dorset Field Club, great old club up there. And, you know, even more stuff at Country Club of Charleston. So we've been incredibly busy, a lot of cool stuff. And, you know, heck, there's even a new build here and a new build there floating around the neighborhood these days. The market is incredibly hot. So it's been a lot of fun.
Have you, had to scale up? Obviously, you know, I think that's one of probably the trickiest things about growing and getting busier. Have you had to scale people up, and how's that been? And how have you had to has there been any struggle letting go of certain things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as you know, from my history, you know, I started my career working for my old boss and mentor, Tom Doak. And I started at the finish level doing detail work at Pacific Dunes, whether it was, you know, fairway detailing or bunker detailing, plantings, and just making stuff look like it had been there forever. So at my heart, you know, having done that at Barnboogle and Pacific and all those early projects, jumping up to shaping and at Barnboogle, and then, you know, lead shaper at things like Cow Club, for example, you know, where you're living out in San Francisco these days. to, you know, the same with the Pinehurst number two project. My heart is always with the detail work in the field. You know, the guys always know that, that I want to like get in the machine and, you know, kind of do my thing. And fortunately, you know, I built my business to try and be a, sort of a blend of my three mentors. You know, Bill Core, he's not going to get in the dozer, but he's going to finish the greens. That's what he loves to do, is be on the Sam Pro. Whereas is Gil, he wants to be on the bulldozer, as everybody knows all the time. And then Tom, you know, Tom Doak, Tom will occasionally for fun, he'll get back in the machine, but he does more of kind of walking and managing and looking over things. So he's kind of a blend between he and Bill. And so I've tried to take pieces of all three of those mentors and just mold it together into what I really want to do out there every day. And it allows me to pull myself away when I need to get out and do kind of the more planning and the budgeting and the managing and the everything of being a golf course designer. But that's, it means that I'm going to get back in the Sam Pro when there's one that I really want to, I really want to have some fun with my, myself all the way down the line, or get in the excavator, the dozer. So, so it's a lot bigger operation than the last time that, that we talked to you. I wasn't far off of a one man band back in those days. But it's been a lot of fun, and we have a lot of fun. You know, I've always liked that quote about Steven Spielberg, that that he just makes every day of the work fun to where it doesn't feel like work anymore, or something to that effect. And that's what we really we try and do. Even when we're at our most stressful, heavy moments where we got to get things done, we have, try and have as much fun as possible.
I feel like we're similar. You know, when we were hanging out, when we hung out last, I was a one man band, I believe, also. So, you know, the you know, no more one man band. And I completely agree. I think, you know, if you do something you love, you never feel like you're working. And I think we're both into it. We get to talk about golf and golf architecture here today. That doesn't feel like work. So I this week, U.S. Women's Open, at one of your, I think, you know, one of the projects that put you first on the map, a big part of your, you know, kind of ascension into the top tier ranks of golf architecture, was your work at Mid Pines and Pine Needles there in Pinehurst. And this week we've got the U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles. Tell us what the key themes, what do people need to know about Pine Needles, this Donald Ross course?
Yeah, you know, we have just worked on this for 6 years. You know, I was joking out there this morning that we started this puppy in the summer of 2016 and we finished it at 9 o'clock last night. And, we've changed a lot. You know, I mean, it has such wonderful history here. You know, obviously just a great old Donald Ross course in the Sand Hills, and then owned and operated for, you know, decades and decades and decades by Peggy Kirk Bell. And it's just awesome to work for the Miller Bell McGowan family. I always joke that they're the great golf family in America. You know, they're so much fun to work for, the enthusiasm, the hospitality driven, like family owned resort style. You know, it's just so much fun. And it's really been a lot of fun to get back to what this golf course, you know, looked like when Donald Ross, worked on it. And, you know, all those decades ago when Mrs. Bell bought it, you know, we've been restoring the sandy hard pan and the native areas around the golf holes. And, the natural bunker style, we've widened the fairways back out, to where you can, you know, players of the highest, handicaps, they can really golf it around and have a lot of space out there. But for the professional players this week, they have a lot of space out there to aim the sides of fairways and really strategize quite a bit. And I've just been like a kid in a candy store all morning, just getting out there and watching them doing just that. But really where this project started is a kind of reverse order from, say, Mid Pines, where we did a lot of the bunker work first, and then we jumped into greens and expansions after that, since greens are always shrinking. On this golf course, we started with the greens first. And the greens, after having been regrassed a few different times between the 1930s and the 2000s, 2008 or so, they just, you know, what happens a lot of times is they settle, and they, when they get rebuilt, they soften just a little bit each time. Especially it's really hard to switch from old push-up greens to USGA greens. Before we had the GPS and scanning ability to put it back absolutely perfectly. So I spent a ton of time just going back through all the old photography of both Pine Needles and just the golf courses around here. And we injected back in a lot of what I call the kind of horse and blade touch, the really cool, small intricacies that really, really make the design shine. It makes you really think about, you know, you got to think a little harder about how you're getting to that whole location tucked in a corner because of a big spine that works into a green or a fall off that goes off the side. So we really expanded down the slopes quite a bit. So you get more of that ejecting sort of motion of the shots when you get offline here, kind of like number two, but also a lot of the cool intricacies that go into the green. You know, kind of an unwritten rule among the staff that worked on this project on the greens, and that's small enough I can remember everybody's name and not screw it up, but myself and Jaeger Kovich and Ben Warren pitched in a little bit on it. I think I got everybody there, and I just had kind of an unwritten rule. It's like I just told everybody to get one contour. Let's find one contour on every green that is so cool and abrupt and unique that it couldn't be made by a bulldozer. You know, it had that cool sort of like really wily sort of detailing to it that Ross excelled at here. You look at photos of like, say, number two green on number two, a bulldozer is just too heavy to get that kind of truly abruptness. You need an excavator or back then the horse and blade. So we really got a lot of that great nuance back in there.
Mm-hmm. So how is this course differentiated from the other? I guess, you know, there's so many Ross courses in the Pinehurst area and great golf courses there. How is Pine Needles have a different identity than, say, Mid Pines, Pinehurst number two, Southern Pines, or Pinehurst number one, you know, the other Ross courses that you're so familiar with there?
That is a great question. Great question. So the, yeah, the first and foremost most important thing to mention of Ross's work is that while it all, you know, fits in within a common theme, he did try and make every one of them just a little bit different. You know, the concept was a little bit different, and that's where he was always just separating himself as such a great artist, obviously. And he was also evolving a lot during the course of his career here. His courses in the teens here are completely different from his work by, say, 1945 or so. So the easy way to do it was to set the goal on each project to try and emulate a different period in his career. But getting back to basics, what he was trying to accomplish, in the case of Pinehurst number two, you know, most of the land on Pinehurst number two is really pretty mellow. You think about 1, 2, 18, 10, all those areas, it's pretty mellow terrain through there. So he was able to get away with those big, huge areas of sandscapes. Those don't really work on the big sloping golf holes where it washes and it's kind of difficult to maintain. So that's why Pinehurst number two has those big, huge swaths, big, wide corridors, and all that heavy sand around the edges of every hole. In the case of Mid Pines, much different. It's sloping. It's very steep. You can't have as much sandscape or it just gets blown to smithereens by the weather. So he chose to do a really difficult golf course where it was going to be tight, compact. The fairways was wide, but the areas outside of the holes, the buffer on the sides, was nil. It was nothing. So you'd go right into the wiregrass, right into the wisteria, right into the tough stuff. And it was meant to be more like, you know, the players club around town. In the case of Needles, you know, they built the big resort kind of attached around it, the big, beautiful building that you see behind number two. It was really meant to be kind of a great championship test, but much more playable. So I've always noticed, you know, as you look at the aerials of it, that's some decent sized corridors, a little closer to number two, but also to where the fairways were really big and wide and spacious. And, less in the way of force carries. His early work in Pinehurst was laced with force carry after force carry. Half the holes on course one and course two had a big carry on it. So he was always evolving and changing. And so I've really tried to draft off that. When we were doing the Pinehurst number two project, to make a long story short, we tried to do the early 40s work where big they did some bigger sand flashes in the bunkers, but it was more mellow, a little more maintainable. And that was perfect for what we were doing leading into the U.S. Open, where if there was a big storm, they could put it back together. But it's still very artsy and splashy and cool. With his mid-30s stuff, he was going all out. You know, he did the wildest greens of his career in Pinehurst. He did the wildest bunkers, big, huge, high sand faces. And I felt like that would be perfect for the vistas of Mid Pines. with Pine Needles, you know, we know we're going to have these kind of events like this time. So we want to be a little bit more like number two, where not as big as sand flashes, a little bit easier to put back together if you get a big storm and things wash out a little bit. And by the mid 40s, he and late 40s, you know, they'd gone through the Depression and the war years where there wasn't a ton of money. And he'd started to get more like the rollover grass face bunkers like you appreciate on those great courses in Chicago you played all these years. So he'd become a lot more mellow and understated with the styling here. And I felt like when we'd finished mid-pines, we'd maximize kind of that style. With number two, we'd maximize that early 40 style as a blend, where I really wanted to do something that was cool and like understated. Like we would talk about Shinnecock's bunkering as much as Pinehurst bunkering when we were working on this, because that's what you kind of would see in those old photos from the late 40s. So there's a lot of turf grass at Pine Needles. It's wider and more playable than kind of the other guys. Again, the nice mellow a bunkering style, but it also sneakily does something else with the styling of the greens, because all the bunkers are kind of sunken down any of those more like lower grass face elements. So it allows you to run the contours that sucks in shots like a Lynx course further into the putting surfaces. So the first and foremost goal was to really, really run those shapes way into the greens where A, it would either jet shots off the edges, or it would just suck in balls like a vacuum from outside in the green into the bunkers. You know, the players are getting a great taste of that right out of the gates today on several holes. But, you know, one is one that's really like that. Whereas if you get on that left-hand side of the green, you know, 10, 15, 20 feet into the green, balls will roll down into the bunker. Same with the third green. And so it goes 18. So it allowed us to do some different things with the styling of the greens, knowing that we were going to be really low with the bunkering. One hand kind of washes the other there.
Yeah. Those greens, you have to be so, so careful and cognizant when you're approaching an edge. You know, that's one of the things that I take away so much from there is the topography of the place, where in so much topography and landing areas out there, but then also how delicate and precise you need to be if you're going anywhere near a corner pin.
Yep, absolutely.
If you were gonna, you know, pull out maybe two or three holes that viewers this weekend should really pay particular attention to at Pine Needles, which ones would you select? And I know that's kind of a question that's hard to answer and sometimes pinpoint down, but I know you like a couple of holes there, you know, on that golf course.
Yeah, let me think about it here for a second. I mean, there's so, you know, it's I joke all the time. It's almost impossible to like ever zero in on holes that I like better than any of the other ones on our courses. I have to think the hardest about that because we're always so focused on details and what we'd like to accomplish over to all architecturally. But, you know, one hole that I think is going to, one, be a big change for the players in this event, and we've made some big changes on, is the 10th hole. You know, when they would have played here the last tournament, there was no crossing feature on the 10th hole, whereas is now there's a really cool feature that if you're going to try and go for it too, you got to carry that baby in the air about 50, 60 yards short of the green. So, you know, the USGA was really, you know, encouraging of us to try and get a little more thought-provoking stuff in the landing zone down there. And originally the 15th hole had a crossing feature on it, but because of the hole has out of bounds kind of on both sides, you know, the village has grown out and around it over these 100 years. It really didn't make a lot of sense to restore the crossing feature on 15. The hole would just be too hard for the average player. But I really wanted to get Ross's famous crossing feature back in. You know, he loved to do those every once in a while, a lot in his early career. So I was like, well, why don't we do it on 10? It's the other par five on the back nine, and it's perfect for it because it's a dog leg. If you bail out away from the left-hand fairway bunkers on the interior side of the dog leg on the tee shot, you have a really big carry across that crossing feature. Whereas you challenge the bunker, all of a sudden the Red Sea's part up there. So he had the two twin bunkers on the side, and we just connected them with kind of a sandy scape. So players really, there's a much more of an incentive for the players to really play aggressively on 10, and a great reward for it. So that'll be a big departure from the previous events. I think that's going to be a lot of fun, but really a lot of the things that I think are going to be really enjoyable this week for the viewer and the players is the elements that we restored that just were missing the last three opens here. For example, the right-hand side of number six has a really cool kind of sandy ridge that injects into the fairway in the landing zone, and it makes for a phenomenal tee shot.
That's one of my favorite tee shots out there. It's blind. You just are staring up over a really clean horizon line, and you've got those beautiful sandscapes up the hole. That tee shot is an incredible tee shot.
Yep. Yeah. You have that big kind of walk the plank kind of tee shot where you want to stay up on the flat up there where you can see in the great look down at the green, but on that right hand side of the fairway, it starts to valley in and it really kick shots hard to the right. So what we did is Ross had some sandy areas and kind of a moundy kind of feature on that right hand side as you get past that valley. That would make it a blind tee shot if you got down in the low down there, almost like a Shinnecock or National Golf League style thing where if you get in the wrong section of the fairway, it's like, oops, I don't know where I'm going now. And so we injected in the sandscape to help with that and really make it to where if the players are going to hit the driver there, they've got to hit on the screws and they got to get into the right section down there, or it's going to bounce to the right, leave you with the blind shot, or worse, it's going to bounce into that sandy zone down there. So I think that's going to be a really pivotal and cool hole. It's the toughest tee shot, I think, on the front nine, with the exception of maybe one or two, where you get a big advantage out of it. There's hard tee shots like eight, but the ones that I really like are the ones where you have these up and overs. I mean, that's the hallmark of Ross's work here. Getting back to basics, how he made Pine Needles different from the other ones is, you know, Mid Pine sits in a big bowl where you have a lot of like side hill kind of tee shots where you can hit draws and fades to your advantage. At Pine Needles, to make it different from number two, where you have the big sandy swaths and the bowl of Mid Pines, he did the up and over tee shots, those hogbacks, where if you hit good solid tee shots, you get that big speed boost, the big bounces forward. You hit weak ones, you're going to be taking three clubs or two clubs more in all day long. You're going to be way back there. So the holes that I really love out there the most are where all those pieces come together, like number two, like number six, where, you know, you hit a big solid tee shot, you get that big bounce forward and you're coming in with a couple less clubs.
Yeah. I think two is another great hole. And I think it one of the things that I love about it is how early in the round, I think that hole really encompasses what you're going to see. It gives you a glimpse of the story that you're going to play against. You know, the challenge of Pine Needles right off the bat. Like, you get that hole is just such a tremendous golf hole, you know, that you get a little bit, you know, there's a lot of blindness out there, which I think is a really neat feature for professional golf. And so what you went out and watched a little bit today. What type of things are you looking for as you go watch a tournament as an architect? And obviously you had the opportunity to watch the U.S. Women's Open at Country Club of Charleston, another one of your courses. What types of things do you look for, and specifically are you looking to watch at Pine Needles?
Yeah, you know, three different things. One is it's a dream come true for me to get out and just watch this. You know, we're pretty lucky that as the schedule shakes out, we don't start at Cabot until July, and we don't start at Lookout Mountain until after Monday, perfectly timed. So
one might say you knew what you're doing. You know that.
Yeah, you know. So the timing works out. The timing works out really nicely that I'm going to get out there and do it. But the second thing is really, you know, it's really fun to see how the players are playing the shots out there. See how, if they're noticing the strategies and the things we're trying to throw out there and make them think a little bit. And then the third piece is, you know, just seeing how it works. If it's really working, it is watching the scoring, seeing if the whole thing is working the way that we've always visualized it. You know, the cool thing about Ross's work here is that I do really think that it's incredibly timeless. You know, big wide fairways that are fun for the average player to play, while being very challenging. The elements in the periphery are challenging. So when you get off the fairway, it's no crapshoot out there. You have to golf your ball. But it's eminently playable for everybody. And the fact that Ross is so great at just nailing the size and the scale of the greens perfectly, And the fall offs and all the cool intricacies that make Pinehurst famous. You know, all of those creative shots the players get to play, putting, chipping, hitting, bump and runs. It just, it tests everything in the bag out there. And so it's fun to see it all come together. When we had the Senior Women's Open here, you know, they played incredibly well the year before at Chicago Golf Club. They ended up, you know, Laura Davis shot 16 under there. You know, it's one of my favorite golf courses anywhere in the country.
I mean, so, it was a par 73.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it's, and that's the way what the scoring should have been. You know, it should have been, it played perfectly. I walked around it that weekend. It was just absolutely awesome. It was a great setup, and she just played her tail off. It was amazing. The next year at Pine Needles, I was worried that the girls were gonna shoot a low score here too, you know. And but the golf course, you know, Ross's styling, you know, it comes back to basics. If the players are hitting the clubs into the green that Ross intended, you aren't going to ever shoot a low score at Pine Needles. You know, this style is just really difficult. And that's what I think is so kind of timeless about is that he meant these to be really, really hard golf courses, and they do still play really hard. So it really makes for a really solid test for the USGA's mantra of like trying to defend par. And so it's fun to watch these tournaments play out and just see how that's all going. But a stride when you get back to, the end of the day on it. I'm an architect. I love to watch players get out there and try the shots that we're set up for them, whether it's the nuances or trying to use, you know, contours within greens to hit a draw or a fade to a certain pin. It's fun to see how they're doing out there, and especially, you know, the different kinds of players out there. You know, this week, you know, I was really lucky this morning because I was following around the person that's in the lead, and she was just crushing it. You know, she's at this hour, she's out of 4 or 5 under. She's playing really good, and she was hitting it just forever out there. Forgive me if I mispronounce her name. She's an amateur. She's a newbie. Ingrid Lindblad, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's, you know, a great college player.
Yeah, she was just on fire. I'm looking at the scoring now. She finished the opening round at 6 under par. She just killed it out there. And then she was in the same group with Annika, and who obviously needs no introduction. And you know, Annika, you know, she's senior open champion, so she doesn't hit it a ton anymore, but she still hits it beautifully out there. And I was having the time of my life watching her hit shots, because she's one of the greatest shot makers ever. And she's coming in with a lot of the clubs that Ross intended out there. She hit like this, like 1, 2, 3 skipper up on an 18 green. She hit it up into up on a 2 green with a little like Ross little running shot. So it's a lot of fun, especially because, you know, because I'm such a Ross nerd and such a Pinehurst nerd, I always know that especially here, he was always thinking ground game first, ground game first, ground game first. So it's really fun to have somebody of Annika's caliber out there watching her trying the stuff that he was designed for. We put so many of the nuances back in that he had, like the spine that ran off of the front left bunker on 2, you know, one of your favorite holes out there that runs out in front of those front left pins. They had like that mid to front left pin set today. I want to get this cool little skipping shot up there to the fall away green. So, you know, a week and a day like this, I'm a kid in a candy store. I'm going to be out there every day, dawn to dusk.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Club Champion. Club Champion is, these are the best when it comes to club fitting. This is where you should go get new golf clubs. I can say that as somebody who's gone there for a long time before they were a partner of the Fried Egg. I've been going to Club Champion basically my entire life. I was getting clubs fit by them out of their garage before they had a storefront. So they have 50,000 plus hittable head shaft combinations in every store. So basically, you're going to be able to find the exact right specs from grip to shaft to club head for you. That's what I like most about Club Champion. You never know what you're going to get when you go in there in terms of clubs. You can have these biases and think, hey, for example, I was a Mizuno iron guy for a long time. The last irons I got fit for, I was Team Mizuno going in. My numbers were better with Callaway, so I went with Callaway. And they were a great set of irons that have lasted me a long time. I think that's the big thing, great quality. So if you use the promo code FRIEDEGG, Through the end of the year, you'll get 20% off your fitting cost with the purchase of a club. Use the promo code FRIEDEGG and you'll get 20% off your fitting cost with the purchase of a club. They've got 100+ facilities all over the world at this point. So it's easy to find a Club Champion location near you. Use the promo code FRIEDEGG and you'll get 20% off your fitting with the purchase of a club. Now back to Kyle France. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the work you did next door at Southern Pines. This is some of your most recent work. It is open, reopened back. It used to be the hidden gem, the great place that you could go avoid the crowds in Pinehurst and go see a really neat golf course that you'd always walk away and say, man, if somebody really put some time, some money and some work into that, that could be a tremendous golf course. Well, now the investment has been made. You did the work. Tell us a little bit about what you did at Southern Pines. I still haven't gotten down there. I'm kind of bummed. I saw it before. It's on my list of things to do. But tell us about the Southern Pines project and what you've been most thrilled about with it.
Yeah, no, it's just been a dream come true. I mean, if somebody would have told me 15 years ago that I was going to get to come and work on the restoration number two for Bill and Ben, and that was going to start this chain of reaction of all these other projects here, I would have been like, no way. I'm never going to be lucky enough to do anything like that. But, you know, I mean, starting with Mid-Pines, that was the place that we went and played when we were working on number two. It was like my golfing home away from home to see the greens because nobody had ever really changed them that much. But the place that we went to like dream about was Pine Needles, because we knew we'd probably have more cool events like this. It'd be fun to do a restoration on it. And then Southern Pines, and especially Southern Pines, because, you know, when I was working on number two, I had the entire depth of photography, all the old photography either in front of me, or I could go into the tough archives on the rain days. And, you know, Audrey Moriarty and the great staff at the archives would help me to find anything I wanted to find. I would spend hours in there. I spent like 5-7 hours in there on the rain days. And so it really gave me like an encyclopedic knowledge of the styling of work that Ross is doing, like we were discussing. And one style that I was just always really fascinated by was his early work there, where he was a younger man. He was my age. You know, it's kind of ironic that like Ross was almost the same age when he started at Southern Pines that I was when I was restoring it, you know. So younger, brasher, wilder architect, you know, Ross was in his heyday of doing cool, wild stuff. So he had more in the way of forced carries, like we were talking about before. You know, I mentioned that number two and course one, those had half the holes where he had like forced carries. He'd mellowed out a little bit by the late teens, where it was maybe more like 6 or 7 holes, and where you had these forced carries in the middle of the golf holes. And so I would, when we would go over and play Southern Pines during those years, I would kind of dream ahead. I'm like, you know, of all the golf courses that here that I would like to restore, that would be the one I'd like to do the teens and the 20s style, where he was just a little bit more wild, a little more woolly. And, you know, again, he was just a fun, young, brash, young Scottish architect in those days. So I always dreamed ahead of that one. You know, Kelly had told me that Kelly Miller, who's the managing partner and owner here, he told me that he really wanted to do a deal with Southern Pines someday. And so I had many years of thinking about it. And fortunately, that's kind of how it all came to fruition. You know, we went in with the goal that we wanted to do that period of work. So the bunkers in that period of Ross's work were really, really big. You know, like I've got this great photo of one of the holes on course three where it's got like a, 120-yard long bunker, and it's slashing across the middle of the golf hole, and you know, there's some cool zany stuff. So went with the golf, really big, bold bunkering, and some crossing features. You know, we got 6 or 7 holes where we have that, where, you know, you got kind of a sandy native area that kind of crosses the middle of the golf hole, as opposed to having that full swath of maintained stuff all the way across. You know, 10 at Pine Needles was the only time that we dipped into that category. You know, gilded on 9 at of course 4, but it was like the one piece to the puzzle that nobody had jumped on yet. And so I was really excited about doing that. And then if we're going to do that with the, you know, the internals of the golf holes, I kind of wanted to stick to that theme with the green complexes. By the early 1930s, when they switched from sand greens to grass greens, when they finally figured out how to make the agronomics work, his earliest work here was always its most bold as well. Like, you look at the pictures of Pinders number 2 greens from 34, 35 and growing, and it's like a jaw dropper. It's like, what? They really built something that wild on 17, as they did. You know, every hole that you look at a photo of, it's just a little bit more amplified. I always said that, you know, the Pinders number 2 greens, they are indeed the concept of what he wanted still today. There's always the great debate of whether they've been raised or lowered and all those things. And I've always felt like, by and large, it's really simple. You're playing the concept of what he wanted. It's just the details have changed over all those regrassings over time, where the highs are a little bit lower and the lows are a little bit higher. Well, I just had in my mind, it's like, okay, we're going into Southern Pines and we're gonna have that dichotomy and elevation changes and the sharpness of features. And pine needles, we needed to be more mellow because, you know, the greens are 12, 13 out there on the stim meter today. So it needs to work for USGA events at the very, very fastest level. Whereas with Southern Pines, it's always had this you know, cult following, you know, guys like you, guys like me, guys like Rand Morrison and Chris Bowie, who, you know, Golf Club Atlas and great rider, Chris.
I mean, that's been Rand's home course for years. He's got to be through the moon with what it is now. You know, that's one of the neat things is the, you know, one of the most influential guys in golf architecture covering it from a writing standpoint has played at Southern Pines. He's lived there and, you know, probably could have gone and played all over. He played Southern Pines and it is a cool place to call home. And now, you know, all the photos, they stop and make me stare because the work looks beautiful. I can't wait to get down there. You're starting next week, Lookout Mountain. Another one of the ones that was always on the list of, man, if they ever did something, that could be pretty cool. I believe I read that it was the second most expensive golf course built in the Golden Age behind Yale. You know, building a course on literally the edge of a mountain is a tough task. And you're teaming up with Tyler Ray for that project. What's going to be the work and the focus of that project?
Yeah, you know, big bunker restoration job and green restoration job. You know, it's the same kind of things that we work on all over the place, where the greens have shrunk a little bit, or in the bunker projects they've done over time, they've kind of been rounded off and lost that really cool, like, hard line element to you know, the shaping, you know, just like we were talking about with Southern Pines, where the greens have just been made softer and gentler with changes by other architects over the decades. And we really tried to amplify the wild putts from top to bottom, or the cool contours coming in and out. So it's the same we're going to get on Lookout Mountain, where, you know, we get the cool little nuances, the little squared off corners that are so famous, and Rainer McDonald greens, and just get all the cool details back, the corner pins and all the fun stuff. But a great bunker job as well, where we're going to get, you know, that kind of cool old world, you know, both styling of the shaping work that Rainer McDonald did, but also just all the great old shapes, you know, like the beauty of their style of having the templates. We have all these dozen, two dozen golf courses that we can go back and, like, that's what it looked like on the BRS or the Alps or any of those holes. So we have, it's going to be a fun archaeology job to go along with the design and the construction side of it, to get the coolest possible product. A lot of tree removal to really get the big views across the property. You know, for people that have never been to Chattanooga, never been to Lookout Mountain, I can't overstate just how cool of a property is. You'd never believe there's anything like it in the American South, because everything's such a gentle rolling landscape. And other than when you get to the Appalachians, and then you go to Chattanooga and you're standing down there at the level of the Tennessee River and looking up there, you go, you know, 1200, 1500 feet up there on the top of this cliff, and that's where Lookout Mountain sits. So it's just an amazing 360 view. Yeah. I mean, the view is down Lookout Mountain towards Georgia, across the valley, across towards the city. It's an incredibly beautiful place. Wonderful, neat, like, rock outcropping. So we're going to cut a good bit of trees out there and just expose it all. So you really get that, that kind of top of the world vibe that only Lookout can provide down here in the Southeast.
The other neat thing about that place is how much gravity just influences your golf game out there. You don't feel like you're on like the side of a mountain all the time, but then you hit a shot and you're like, whoa, that thing just ripped that way. Like you hit putts and they just, and you don't see the break and they just rip, you know, the different way that you think it. It's a golf course that, you know, I feel like you could play it hundreds of times before you really understood what everything that was going on because of the setting there on the side of a mountain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the club does everything right. You know, the fact that, you know, they don't overseed at all there. And as you know, the fastest surfaces in the world are either, you know, the great old blend of fescue and just Lynx grasses in the UK. And then second, really, it's dormant Bermuda grass. It's like just that shiny sheen, just super fast running surface in the wintertime. And so between that and the contour out there, it is a cool, cool ground game course, you know. So definitely one of the top priorities to just maximize that out. You know, the all the false fronts that we're going to kind of span back out and add, those are really going to get it to where, much like you and I have talked about so much when we walked around Mid Pines, you know, remember all those false fronts where I just went down the slope as far as I could with the green height grass. You're taking that Velcro effect out. You know, I think we're going to have a huge boost in the fun factor of what's already incredibly fun ripper on fast golf course during certain times of the year.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big themes of the restoration work that I've seen of yours is the recapturing of unpinnable area. And I think like courses and across the world, really, sometimes when maintenance practices go one direction and is the first thing removed or the things that aren't recaptured necessarily always in restorations is that unpinnable space, because they think, oh, we can't put a pin there. So why do we need to mow that as short, you know, green height grass? Talk to us about the dimension that unpinnable space, what it adds to a golf course.
Well, I mean, it's almost like as simple as 1, 2, 3 sort of answer. You think about it, usually these super fast hole locations on the green were meant to be the fast sections of greens that when the golf course is built. So when you lose that, you're losing the spiciest hole locations that the original architect intended, especially at the margins of greens where are the first places that usually go, because like, well, that's too steep, that's too fast. Balls are just rolling off the green over there. You slow that down just enough, and all of a sudden you've got world-class hole location. Yeah, you know, prime example, the first hole that I got out and watched this morning was 2000 and two, or sorry, over on 16. Whereas in 2007, the green had become, you know, a little bit too steep and a little too fast. On the far furthest left hole location, there's a cool little hollow that Ross built out from the left-hand bunker and extending out in front of the front left pin. But it got to the point where that was like 4.5-5%. So I slowed that down just enough that you could put a pin back in there at, you know, hot 2.5, almost 3%. And Shannon Rouillard, awesome lady. I love working with Shannon. She sets up all the ladies events for the USGA, and she works so hard at it. She's been so much fun to work with and to be around or make suggestions or just to pick her brain. You know, I always tell her that I just love learning from her the nuance of setup. You know, I've learned so much from the three events we've worked on together between here and the U.S. Women's Open at Country Club Charleston, and then the 19 Senior Open here. Right out of the gates, boom, Shannon went right for that front left pin right out of the gates today. So it's fun to see the sections of greens that got abandoned utilized on these tournaments and the settings where it really counts quite a bit. It has really, really expanded the palette that Shannon can utilize to get these players thinking and reacting and having fun out there.
That obviously you're hitting on a very hot topic in golf architecture, green speeds, restoration of greens and green speeds and pinnable space. What's the kind of the line that you personally walk with softening greens versus restoring them to originals? You know, how does that balance work? Obviously, I imagine sometimes it's club specific, but you know, what's your general mentality with that?
Yep. Yeah. You know, I think we've gotten to a really great place in turf grass management where right now, still what we do, it works. It's not too taxing on the plant to the point where, you know, it's just smoking it. I think if we go any further, with speeds, it's going to make it to where it's actually a negative. You know, it's going to be just that much more expensive. That was harder on the plants. And also, you know, getting back to basics, we don't want to lose these great hole locations on old golf courses. You know, the results need to match the goals. So I think it's great that we've gotten to where speeds can be this hot and this fast, and players can get it really bouncing around on the greens, even on golf courses where it's, you know, not the right soils or it gets wet out there. But we don't want to get it to where it's going either too fast or going backwards to where it's too slow. So I always feel like a lot of the time, if you have a golf course where you're losing hole locations, you should probably slow down the greens to get it back to where you need to be. But if you're going to do a big project and you're going to do the work on them, you should take the opportunity to really get it right and get all those hole locations back to where they really work without overdoing it, without, you know, taking the cool mustard out of the greens and going backwards. So it's a very fine line. It's a great question, and it requires careful thought. That's why everybody should have really a really good active restoration architect.
All right. Well, we're gonna keep this one short. We're gonna, you know, with all the work you got, we're gonna be talking again sometime soon. It's been too long since we last talked. I mean, you were probably in the first 25 episodes of the Fried Egg Podcast, and
that's right. Yeah,
and we'll get you back on here shortly. But thank you for coming on, lending your immense knowledge of Ross and the Sandhills there in North Carolina. And I want to let you get back on the golf course and watch some golf. And congratulations! And can't wait to talk again, Kyle.
Sounds good. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. And like I said, we got to get you out to some of these projects. It's going to be a fun summertime, and come visit us.
I'll tell you, I'm on the road. I could assure you that I've got ample travel time. I just need to I got to work the Southeast in. Could be a fall destination.
Let's do it.
All right, Kyle, we'll talk soon, and good luck with Lookout and Cabot Citrus in this week.
Very good. Thanks, bud. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Thank you very much to Meg Atkins. She does a wonderful job editing out, you know, all my mistakes. And as a quick reminder, we've got Father's Day around the corner. We are doing a sale. It is 15% off everything in our pro shop except for photography. So it starts this Friday, the day this podcast goes out. And it runs all the way through Sunday the 19th. So we've got a bunch of brand new merchandise that'll be in the shop. We should have some country club at Brookline, some US Open themed merchandise soon, within probably a week or so, that'll be up. But get 15% off everything in the shop outside of photography. And it'll automatically be applied at checkout. So you can't even pay full price if you want to. So do that. Go to theproshop.thefriedegg.com. See our new stuff up there. And thank you again for listening to another episode of The Fried Egg.